Thanks.
All right, thanks. I'm afraid the duties of a division officer such as myself are never quite done, and I have to go down and tear down the Planetary Geology Division booth, which has to be packed up before 5 o'clock. So I'll have to leave, but Jack Schmidt has graciously agreed to help Bill co-chair the rest of the session. So I will do as my last duty, introduce the next talk, which is by Bruce Campbell, B. Ray Hawk, and Donald Campbell, and the title is Surface Morphology of Domes in the Marius Hills and Mons Rumka Regions of the Moon from Earth-Based Radar Data. And the talk will be given by Bruce Campbell.
Thank you. Well, we'll start with a nice pastoral scene of West Virginia there before we go back to the moon. How do I advance the slides? Oh, just this one. Okay. Great. So I'm going to be talking, it's a nice follow-on to the previous talk, talking about this whole area here in terms of the sort of odd volcanic complexes in the northwestern nearside Maria. We just saw a nice talk on the Aristarchus Plateau. I'm going to focus today on the Marius Hills region and then the Mons Rumker construct, which is about an 80-kilometer diameter collection of domes that are all sort of coalesced together, versus the Marius Hills, which are a more disparate set of domes, anywhere up to 15 kilometers or so in diameter, spread out over this whole area here between north of Marius Crater and almost down to Reiner Crater. So the technique we're going to use to study these features is Earth-based radar, and the attractive part of that is that we can see through the regolith to varying degrees. We use a 12.6 centimeter wavelength for high resolution coverage, but relatively shallow penetration on the order of a meter or two. Then we can use 70 centimeter wavelength to get anywhere up to, we can go 30 or 40 meters into the Highland regolith, quite a bit less in the Mare regolith, but only down to somewhere between 300 and 500 meter spatial resolution. So we transmit a radar signal from the Arecibo telescope, we bounce it off the moon, and for some various technical reasons, it's more convenient to pick it up at the Green Bank telescope in West Virginia, and to end up making a picture based on this coordinate system where you basically use the Doppler shift of the moon with positive and negative frequencies, one side's coming toward you, one side's rolling away from you at any given time, and then the delay that goes out like ripples on a pond away from the point on the moon closest to us, we get a nice coordinate system and make a picture. What we also have to do in all of this, and the sort of change that came around about 4 or 5 years ago was we switched over to doing focus processing. And just a nice example of the RIL at Schroeder's Valley here, going from the essentially unfocused data to a 20-meter resolution image that we can get by doing synthetic aperture processing. And this is nothing more than essentially just beating the problem to death with a lot of computer time and correcting for all the different motions that would otherwise smear the image out. And we're in the process now, just as a plug, of mapping the entire near side of the moon at 80-meter resolution with this wavelength to get a nice synoptic data set to help backstop some of the upcoming orbital radars. So starting with the Marius Hills, here's a nice oblique image showing some of these roughly 8 to 10-kilometer maximum scale domes here with some of the wrinkle ridges on the Mare as well. And the question we wanted to look at was, these have long been understood to be apparently basaltic based on their surface composition from multispectral data, but they have a very different sort of macro scale structure to them. They don't look like Mare basalt flows. And so the question is, what's a good terrestrial analog to them, and what might that tell us about how they formed in the lunar environment? And here's just some close-up views. We'll see some examples of this Dome E. This is 8 kilometers across. It's one of the larger ones. But you can see in some cases they've got these nice sort of lobate features that look like they were formed by some kind of thick lava flow. In other cases, they look more almost like table mountains or failed mesas that may just reflect that they have, in fact, had some kind of flank failures since they were emplaced. Well, this was the first clue that something was amiss. We actually were interested in looking at the Reiner Gamma formation, And this jumped out as a much more interesting thing in the picture, was the fact that all of those little domes have relatively high backscatter relative to the background mare terrain at 70 centimeter wavelength. And what that says is that somewhere between the surface and the distance to which the radar can probe into the ground, there are a large number of 10 centimeter up to, say, a meter scale or so boulders, far beyond what you get in any kind of even young relatively thin regolith-covered mare deposit. And just to jump ahead a bit, more like what we see in terms of backscatter properties, similar to some of these younger impact craters. So that the most characteristic parameter that we've been able to pull out and work with on this is the circular polarization ratio. And I won't force everybody to read through this. This is the Surveyor 7 site. You can see that there's rocks on the ground. There are doubtless rocks suspended within the regolith. And what we think is going on is that the more dense this surface and subsurface collection becomes, the more the radar is able to go through multiple bounce situations, where on the Earth, when the ground is wet, you don't get much penetration. Mostly what you get is single bounce scattering off the surface, and occasionally you might hit a rock and get a double bounce. On the Moon, it appears that we have many more opportunities when the rock population is high to have an increased circular polarization ratio, because this same sense echo, which is the top of the ratio, is enhanced by those double bounce facet echoes. So essentially, when we talk about high circular polarization ratios, we're talking about a lot of rocks on the surface or buried beneath the surface. And this is what we get. This is the 70 centimeter mosaic for the entire southern near side of the Moon. So the South Pole's right there, Tycho, and there's Oriental. And what we wanted to go ahead and do was, first of all, get a sort of database of values to compare to when we went to look at the domes. And so here's values for Tycho. You can see Tycho is one of the highest circular polarization ratio places. Lots of fresh rocks have not been broken down by micrometeorite bombardment over the same length of time as some of the older craters. And then we go down from there, and we get down to values of around 0.5 or 0.6 for these Copernican to Eratosthenian to even very late Imbrian craters. But you can get circular polarization ratios up over unity. And we think these variations are due to differences in age primarily, with also some difference for whether you land in a mare or a highland target. So where do the Marius domes fall in all of this? Well, this is that dome E. What we've done here is to plot up the backscatter of these features against their circular polarization ratio. And here's here's the mare, the typical mare units around them. Here's a crater ejecta. Here's Kepler, quite a young crater. Here's Reiner, and here's Cavalerius, all relatively young craters, all reasonably high circular polarization ratios, and these domes stand out above them. They are rougher than anything at the near rim of Kepler. So this is a really odd kind of thing we see on the Moon, and unlike anything else we've seen besides impact crater ejecta. And it's confirmed when we go to 12 centimeter data. This is a nice view of the 12 centimeter circular polarization ratio laid on top of a lunar orbiter frame. So you can see the Reiner Gamma formation coming up here. Here's some of those domes. Here's dome E. And what you've got are the red colors here are high circular polarization ratio again. Blue is the more background mare up to into the greens, but the reds and the oranges are really standing out. So we see this same high circular polarization phenomenon going on even in the 12 centimeter data, which suggests to us that the rock abundance enhancement that's associated with these things is relatively shallow. It can't be covered by very much regolith, otherwise the 12 centimeter wouldn't see it in comparison to the 70 centimeter. And all of these results point to a very, very rugged original surface. These things have got to just be shoulder to shoulder rocks, both at the surface or suspended within the near surface regolith. So let's switch gears now and go north to that to the Mons Rümker feature. Again, this is about 80 kilometers across. This is a lunar orbiter frame showing these coalesced domes. I don't know whether you can pick them out, but there's five or six fairly large domes, and then a series of flows that form a sort of scarp margin with Oceanus Procellarum here around it. It's a very different behavior than what we saw for the domes at the Marius Hills. What you get is a very low 13 centimeter or 12.6 centimeter backscatter and an extremely low circular polarization ratio. And I'll go on to the 70 centimeter in a second, but while we're on this, we also looked at the surface iron and titanium content from Clementine and from Lunar Prospector measurements to make sure we had all our ducks in a row. There is no particularly enhanced iron and titanium content. In fact, they're relatively low across this area. So when you see a very, very low radar return without an enhanced amount of iron and titanium in the regolith, that says that there's a great paucity of rocks within this material down to the probing depth of the radar. So what we interpret that to be is that in all likelihood there is something like 3 to 6 meters of mantling material. In all likelihood, it's a pyroclastic deposit on top of that material. And it's interesting that one sentence in this particular paper back in 1974 suggested that some of this terrain was in fact subdued, and we think it's in fact subdued by the pyroclastic deposit. So again, something very different from what we have seen at the Marias Hills, and more like what we see at Aristarchus. So now here's the lunar orbiter picture blown up with the 70 centimeter backscatter laid on top of it. So you can see very low backscatter in the north here, relatively low backscatter to very low backscatter down in the southern part, and then there's this considerably higher backscatter region that gets up to about the brightness of the Mare terrain and even a little bit brighter out onto this area here. What we think we're seeing is relatively deep pyroclastic material across this whole area, deep 3 to 6 meters, not anywhere near as deep as at Aristarchus. And then we've either got a thinner covering in here, perhaps because this material is a little younger, or else that this is a more rugged flow unit. So there is the possibility that in this case, this is the stuff that is like the Marias Hills, but it's been covered by that 3 to 6 meters of pyroclastic debris. So we see a sort of attenuated signature from that. But all in all, this is a very interesting finding that we had not expected. So to summarize it all, we talked about, and Brent talked about, the Aristarchus Plateau, we think are relatively thick, up to 30-meter deep pyroclastic deposits over ponded lava flows. We don't see any of this evidence for very, very rugged lava flows, even in the areas we think are relatively thinly mantled. These appear to be probably not anything out of the ordinary for typical Mare basalt flows, all formed by these fire fountains and high-volume eruptions. We go down to the Marias Hills, and what we see is something that we think, for a terrestrial analog, would be SP flow in Arizona. This basically squeezed-out pile of 50-centimeter to meter scale or so boulders, relatively smooth-sided, that has beautiful radar characteristics just like the Marias Hills. So cover this with a meter or two of regolith, and I think that's what you got here. And so I think it raises some interesting questions about how you get that kind of morphology in a situation where, at least if you believe the geochemistry papers, you're not going to have enhanced silica content in these lavas. So you've got to come up with some other mechanism, either the eruption conditions themselves, the rate at which it's in place, something to do with erupting it into a vacuum, take your pick. But it's an interesting thing that you get an equivalent signature to what on Earth, this is a basaltic andesite. So and then finally, when we go up to Mons Rümker here, it appears we have sort of a hybrid of those two behaviors. We have pyroclastic deposits to a significant degree, but we also have some sense that at least part of those domes may be relatively rugged lava flows in the style of the Marias Hills. So I think there's an interesting story to be told here about what was going on as these late-stage volcanics came into play. Thanks very much.
Got time for a couple of questions?
I've got one question. Do you know of any linkages that might exist between Mons Rümker and the Marias Hills in terms of their position within the Procalaran Basin, and if so, what would the implications be?
Only to the extent that I think in some of the early mapping work there were suggestions that somehow or another these structures might have a relationship to large-scale basin structure, but I don't think that was ever pursued beyond just the suggestion that was the case.
Okay. Thanks, Bruce.